Well, welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Rachel, Malcolm and I are joined by Al Kellock, back for his holidays. Two or three weeks in the wild camping. He's made it back. He's shaved. He's clean shaven. He's back to work. And I'm delighted to be joined by Edinburgh Rugby Centre, Mark Bennett. We're going to touch on all things Edinburgh and have a look at Mark's amazing career to date. Mark, you've international player, former Glasgow Warriors player, Edinburgh Rugby player at the moment, Scotland Sevens, GB Sevens. Welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. And I can't believe you're still only 27. How does that work?
Oh, you're telling me. I'm feeling old now. I've got some of the young boys in Edinburgh this week, and some of them are 10 years younger than me. Must have been how Al felt when I turned up.
Oh, mate, I'm trying to work out how you can still be 27.
That's what I said.
What age did you turn up at? 12?
I had my first bit of Glasgow when I was 17. So.
And then away to Clermont.
Yeah.
For what, a year?
Yeah, about a year and a half-ish. And then back across.
I was looking through the details, like 27, I can't believe
it. Sounds young.
Hugely successful career so far, Mark, and we'll look back as well as looking forward in the next 40 minutes or so. But you're back training, you've been back for a while, you'll be fighting fresh, fit, rearing to go. Has there been a marked difference in the last maybe week or so in terms of ramping up the physicality and intensity ahead of the game starting at 22nd?
There has been for most of the squad. Last week was the first week we were doing proper contact. We'd done a fair bit of bag work in the couple of weeks in the build up to that. And then last Wednesday was going to be the first real day of getting into it, and I managed to split my lip playing touch in the morning. So I've done absolutely hee-haw, but the boys have been getting stuck in. Had two big contact sessions last week, and
to confirm, you said you split your lip.
Yeah.
In touch.
Right, point touch.
Clashed heads with Henry Pyrgos, the big lad that he is.
And, big units coming together there.
managed to put my tooth through my lip.
Oh, no.
Which was nice. So 6 stitches later, I've managed to get a pink bib and avoid contact for another week.
We're only 27 already, biting his lip to get out of contact.
this week?
Yeah, got the stitches taken out this morning, actually, so
no way out now.
I can milk it for, but I think we're back in from Wednesday, so we'll wait and see.
How's it been, Mark? It's been, I think we kind of likened it a wee bit to what Mossy and I would have known from a kind of old school pre-season where there wasn't much rugby, there wasn't a ball involved very much, but just because you had to be socially distanced. Has it been a bit like that, a lot of running in straight lines, or a bit of fun in there as well?
Yeah, the first 4 weeks when we were in for voluntary training was it was tough going. We were literally just in. You had a little booth by yourself to do weights. Everything blocked off. Couldn't see anybody else. And then out on the pitch, and you had to be 17 metres apart or whatever it was. So that was strange. Obviously, when you're used to just being around every day, and even just gym sessions, the social side of gym sessions, catching up with boys in between sets and have a bit of crack. There was none of that, so it was different. But to be fair to the lads, off the back, but we're in good shape. And
you couldn't see each other, but could you hear each other?
There was little gaps in the fence, and so often you'd just see a wee eye coming up to the fence and see what was going on. So and then I remember seeing Darcy Graham and Blair Kinghorn standing on a chair so they could see over to each other. So. The boys did their best to find ways.
So you said you're in pretty good nick. Did you have kind of access to good stuff over lockdown in terms of training? What did you get up to?
Yeah, so I was quite lucky. Through a friend of a friend, I managed to get a load of weights from his gym and set them up in my next door neighbour's got like a big mushroom tunnel.
What is it like a
berry tunnel or whatever, you know.
Oh, like a tarpaulin
thing. Basically, like a Victor Pollen greenhouse kind of thing. And I made up a proper bush league gym in there.
Oh, nice.
So like it was actually quite good fun. So he's got a mechanic that works out of the mushroom tunnel, so like we managed to make platforms out of tyres and all of that sort of nonsense. It was actually quite good fun. And kept myself going. Did absolutely no running until about a week before I went to go in. But the weight side of it was good fun.
You're a little bit rural, aren't you? You're out in the sticks a wee bit.
Yeah, just outside Edinburgh. So it was nice to have a bit of space.
Gives you an opportunity to make the most of mushroom tunnels in the next door neighbour's garden. There wouldn't be very many people like that.
The fact that the weather was nice at the start of lockdown as well, it was bloody roasting in there.
I was going to say, it'd be sweating. Did you put any weight on it?
No, of course I didn't.
Sweat it out. So now that you're back, contact sessions on the squad are back with contact sessions, and you're building up towards that that first game on the 22nd. I assume it'll be almost a clean bill of health in terms of availability for coaches. So there'll be a huge amount of competition for that starting berth. But how's the midfield combinations and competition looking at Edinburgh Rugby this year, Mark?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, we've got a lot of boys competing for the places. It's good to see Chris Dean back fit again after a sore one that he took in pre-season last year. So he missed most of the last season. Mm-hmm. I think he was involved in the last game before everything happened. So it's good to have Dino back involved. George Taylor's done really well this year. He's come on from having played, what, two games or something last year to, mm-hmm. I think he's been involved in all bar one or two this season. So, and then Chuck and Matt Gordon, who's our new centre from London Scottish, who's a big laddie. So it's real good competition in there for the number 12 shirt. And then myself and JJ competing for that one at 13. I think one that's been really exciting as well is that Matt Curry's been in training with us. He's been excellent, and he's looking really, really sharp in training. So I think there's a hell of a lot of potential coming from him as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of young faces in both the squads, isn't there? Matt played under 20s last year outside centre, and there's quite a lot of similarities in the way that you play, actually, Mark, in terms of getting in that outside break, attacking mindset. So it'll be loads of opportunity for you all to compete, not play the game for so long, and then the two next games are within 6 days apart. So they probably will need to manufacture opportunities for people and kind of manage a squad. You know, such intense derbies 6 days apart. We've seen it in the Southern Hemisphere, so that the depth of the squad will be important at the start of this season and the season ahead.
Yeah, I think as well it's going to be a long year, isn't it? So we're going to go into from this season pretty much rolling into the next. So that's the thing about but this block of training that we've had is it's been a weird one, because for us we're trying to get up to speed to take on Glasgow and obviously hopefully push on to the semi-finals and then the knockout stages of Europe as well. But at the same time you're needing to get the training in to last for the season that we're about to go into as well. So coaches have been trying to ram in all the rugby that they need, and S&C have been trying to get the conditioning in that they need. So it's been a really different pre-season, because normally we've got, what, 3-4 months to do that. Instead we've got 4 weeks.
As you say, you could have a decent amount of rugby before you even look at next season, if you like, because back-to-back derby matches, there's a bit of work to be done, but it should lead into a semi-final, and ideally a final for you, and obviously Europe as well. So there's an awful lot of rugby still to be played and to finish off last season before you even consider the next again season. So I assume that from a player's point of view, a coach's point of view, it'll be about peaking for those matches as opposed to necessarily looking too far ahead at this stage.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, we've got a huge opportunity. We're in a position that you'd be dreaming of, aren't you? I mean, we've got a good chance of home semi-final and knockout stages of Europe. So we're in a place to go and really compete. But it's normal when you're at that stage of the season, though, you're sort of all honed in your roles and you know everything you need to do. Whereas we've got new guys coming into our squad.
Yeah.
We could potentially be playing the guys in these derby games that we haven't played with before. And it's, again, 2 weeks before a potential semi-final. So it's a different position to where anybody's been before. But I guess everybody's on the same boat.
We talk about the new guys coming in. What about the guys moving on? And it'll be guys moving on who have played an enormous part in getting you to where you are now. Has there been conversations about how they stay part of that journey? They won't be on the park, but have you had those conversations, or do you take them a wee bit closer to the games, or maybe a wee bit closer to those bigger games, ideally, as the semi-finals in the knockout stages?
I think the biggest thing is that there hasn't been that many conversations because we haven't seen anybody, we haven't been able to. So even when we're at training at the minute, we're still doing our stuff and then we're away. So it's still a very different environment to one that we would have been in 6 months ago. But it's a really weird one that, like you say, we've got guys who have played so much rugby for us this season that have played a huge part in getting us to the position that we're in, but they're no longer here. So it's a strange one. From our point of view, you just want to do it justice and finish it off, don't you?
Does it feel like the end of last season, or does it feel like a start of the next season?
It does kind of feel like we're going into a new season because it is like right now we're in a sort of pre-season-ish phase. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty strange, but
I suppose that can work in what Al's talking about in your favour as well. You play Bordeaux in the Challenge Cup knockout phases, and they've probably one of the world's best players, Semi Radradra, who you directly played against last year.
Absolutely delighted.
Amazing Fijian, who's moved on to Bristol. So they'll be in that.
That was one of the first things that I got a text off my dad the day that the dates got announced for the Bordeaux game, saying you must be delighted you don't have to take him on again. So it's nice when your old boy shows confidence in you like that.
How are you all feeling about actually playing proper rugby? As you say, like, you've not had a huge amount of prep going into it. You feel kind of physically ready?
Yeah, it's just, I don't really think I've got my head around the fact that in 2 weeks' time I'm going to play a game. Mm-hmm. But again, at the same time, I've still not actually done any contact whatsoever. I've hit a couple of bags.
Yeah.
So I think that it will start to feel a bit more real. And I think that over the next few weeks in training, we'll have to get ourselves into a sort of more game-like situation. And I think there's probably going to be a little bit more sort of live stuff than what we usually do. But because again, normally going into a season, we have a couple of warm-up games before you get into it. Whereas we're straight in. I think it will be that first game is going to be strange on all accounts. Because I mean, no crowd or limited crowd, however it works, and then having not played in so long, it's going to be different.
Yeah, and then a quick turnaround to the next one, so I assume it's going to just be recovery mode after that one and then get yourselves back to trying to feel almost normal before you play again.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a few sore bodies after that first one. It'll take slightly longer than usual to get your bodies hardened, so I think there's going to, like Al said earlier on, I think there's going to be a lot of the squad being used.
Yeah,
I suppose it's more a question for coaches, really, but not to get too far ahead of yourselves, but would it be wise to look at it as a 4-game series, the 2 derbies and then potentially a semi-final final, and do the preparation that way rather than, you know, thinking you've got 2 games and then half thinking about a semi-final and a final, because after that it leads straight on to the European as well. So you could have a really condensed period where management of the squad becomes really important, but I guess as a player it's just work hard, knuckle down, try and get the start, play well and start the next game week.
Yeah, I mean from a player's point of view it's obviously going to be very different to what the coaches are thinking, but it's always just about that first game and hopefully getting your hands on that shot and doing what you can do, and then hoping that you can be in a position that your body's all right to go again the next week.
And you know a bit about the opposition, don't you? You know a bit about Glasgow.
I've played against them a few times now as well as having obviously played with them for a long number of years. So, I mean, they're a side who likes to play a bit of rugby, they like to throw the ball about. And from us, it's about making the game as structured as we can to stop them getting into the positions that they want to be while still playing our own game.
Now, there's a bigger picture for you, clearly, from an Edinburgh point of view, but do you enjoy the games? Do you enjoy the derby games? Are they different now that you are very established at Edinburgh than when you first moved over and there was still an element, maybe, I don't know, was an element of still looking at Glasgow to say, look, this is what you've lost, or is all that gone now?
I think that for me the hard part is playing against mates. I'm not the most serious of people at the best of times, so the first time I played against Glasgow, I was getting subbed on at the same time as Rob Harley, who's one of my good mates, and I turned him like turned over and looked towards him, and like I was kind of giggling about it, and he was just like proper deadpan, not interested at all. And like I find that quite hard. And then things like, obviously you know people well, and you know what they're good at and what and where their weaknesses lie. But again, my first ball carry, I caught the ball, and two people in front of my hand was Tim Swinson and Finn Russell, and I wasn't going to run it Swinno, so Finn was getting it. So it's like things like that, like I find that side of it funny, and that's the bit that I find harder, is not letting sort of knowledge on the people get in the way of playing what's in front of you, if that makes sense.
I said at the start, you're only 27-year-old, but you know, already achieved so much with international the games for Scotland, obviously, international sevens, played at Claremont as a youngster, GB sevens medalist as well. Like, what, looking at your career so far, are there obvious highlights that stick out? You've had one or two nasty injuries as well that have kind of truncated a lot of success, but highlights-wise, what would jump out if we're asking you now?
I think playing the Commonwealth Games at Glasgow was probably one of them. Like, obviously I'm a West Coaster, so playing in front of a home crowd and a huge event, it was pretty special. And doing it alongside some of my really good mates as well. I'm close with Lee Jones, so I always enjoyed playing with him, and it just makes it a little bit more special, doesn't it, when you've got a good mate out there beside you. I think the World Cup, obviously playing the World Cup at all was huge. That Australia game, well, it's always what I'm going to be remembered by, isn't it? The one that almost was.
Did you read the interception? Obviously, you're talking about that kind of 2 minutes to go, the try, the interception against Australia at Twickenham, when the whole Twickenham was on their feet shouting for Scotland. Talk us through the moment with interception. Did you see the long pass coming? Did you see it was, I think it was one of the, was it the prop that gave it, or the hooker?
So we'd actually, it was what they always did. That was their exit, was they would go out the back there, and then they'd try and shift it one more, and then put the kick in. It was just after the rain had come on, and the prop sort of guddled it slightly. And it was as soon as I saw him fumbling, like it wasn't something that we'd planned. It wasn't a case of when this happens, you can go that way. It was just a case of some fumbling it, and because I was coming up anyway, by the time that he did throw the pass, it was in a spot I could nick it. So it was pretty cool.
The noise was incredible as well. I remember being there. It was just a moment that kind of, as you say, hangs in time.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, like when you're thinking that like Twickenham was cheering for Scotland, like it was pretty special in that way. I'll never forget that.
You've had, say, one or two bad injuries as well. The capacity to deal with those injuries and keep coming back fitter and stronger and always can you perform as well as you do. Injuries at a young age in France and then obviously back here. How mentally strong do you have to be to cope with that? Because every bad injury, you've came back and you've set another example.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I've been very lucky with is I've always had good medical teams looking after me. And I mean, especially my two sort of big injuries I've had at Edinburgh. I've got pretty close with Luke Vella, who's our sort of rehab strength and conditioning coach, and it makes a huge difference when you've got somebody there that gets you, and me and Luke got on well, and he knew how to push my buttons and wind me up to get more out of me to then get me obviously back quicker. Anyone that knows me, like, I'm a ridiculously competitive person, and everything. So I think having that, the sort of thing that people understand how they can get the best out of you, pushes me to then obviously be better. The big thing for me is like I love playing rugby, and I've said it before, but I'm like I'm genuinely just like a glorified dog. I enjoy just chasing a little ball. So it's one of those ones that when I get back out on the pitch, it's what I enjoy. So
yeah.
Rather than
worry,
overthinking it, and I'm not somebody who worries. The number of times that, like, for example, when I did my hamstring, I injured it being over ball, and they tried to sort of reintroduce me to getting into that position again and my strength programs and all of that sort of stuff. But then the first day we went out on the pitch and we were like, we're gonna do it. Our physio and S&C, like, I could tell they were nervous, but like, they just said to me, like, get over the ball. I was like, okay. Just doing as I'm told, and like, because I know that they wouldn't have put me in that position if I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So that's just huge.
It's a standout memory for me, though. Moshe, you ask about mental toughness, and when Mark first came to Glasgow, and he's going through, you know, difficult times with injury, for a young lad, anybody involved in any sport, injury has to be up there with the worst thing that can happen to you. And Mark was, you know, 18 years old at the time, Mark, just turning 19, just when he'd come back. And that pragmatic approach isn't there, as everybody knows, with a lot of 18 and 19 year olds. And you can easily get yourself into a point where you're kind of spiraling out of control with the kind of the mental side of it. But your approach to it, because you do simplify things down, right? You don't overcomplicate things, as you say. But it was an inspiration. It was fantastic to see, because you could see that he was, you know, mature beyond his years, even at that age. And you've seen that throughout your whole career, because, like, Moshe, you've reeled off all those highlights. But with each one of those highlights, you could probably, Mark, just about put down the tough time that's been alongside it that's then got you to that highlight. And a lot of that for you has been injuries, and injuries, not different injuries. It's not like you've had to continually work on your hamstring, continually work on the knee. You've had different bits and pieces, which in the sport that we play do go wrong. So, yeah, I think the way you've conducted yourself throughout that with the tough times probably makes the better times even better, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. And it's funny, like, I had a chat with Adam Gray, who was on the council. Mm-hmm. He's one of my old coaches, and we sat down in a chat one day recently, and it was when things were going well during, like, last season. I'd found a bit of form at the start of the season, and he'd said to me, he's like, watching you, I've changed as a player, because I used to be all about my running game, and that was all I did. As you would know, Al wouldn't pass the ball. But
I wouldn't pass to Al either, Mark, to be honest.
I was never close enough to him for it to pass to me, Moshe.
It was always, that was it. But because of the injuries, and I've kind of learned where I need to be, and especially during my times at Edinburgh, I've got a back three around me who are now a lot quicker than I am. Like, Duane's ridiculous. And Darcy and Blair are electric as well. So it's one of those ones that, yeah, I know what I'm good at, but I also know that I've got guys there that when I can't do what I might have been known for before, they'll do it for me. So I've kind
That's
of,
called experience,
I think I've matured.
Mark.
Yeah, I think I've matured in that way. More than I'd like to admit.
Well, you mentioned Adam Gray there, Pinky, and he was a big part of you, and we spoke about him in a podcast, but a big part of your career growing up, as was Cumnock, and I suppose your roots, and you're still involved there and still keen to be putting as much back in as possible.
Yeah, so I actually used to coach Stephen Raby, who now runs a school of rugby at Cumnock. And I coached him at Carrick, so I still keep in touch with him quite a lot.
What was he like to coach?
Oh, he's murder. it's funny looking now at all of his posts. Like, I follow him, and he's always about learning and growth, and he was the first person that would try and tell me, like, question what I was doing.
To give it a bit of context, when I remember Rach, Moshe, when I was lucky enough to take over a bunch of young lads to Japan the year before the World Cup, and Stephen applied to be assistant coach. So Stephen came over as assistant coach, and he's a PE teacher at, remind me, Mark, name of the school?
Auchinleck Academy.
There was four or five kids from there, just what you're saying, that fantastic guy, but I wouldn't necessarily have enjoyed, I'm not sure it would have been easy to coach.
No, and it was that way that, like I say, it's really funny now looking at everything that he's got on about, because it was the complete opposite. It's a do as I say, not as I do kind of mentality, I think. And to be fair, I think he'd be the first one to admit that as well. But so he had me on during lockdown. I went and did a Zoom call with with under-18s at Cumnock, and we went through some game footage and kind of just had a look at what we would look at as a pro side. So that, I mean, a lot of these guys don't know what they're actually looking for. So it was, they found it really interesting. And when Raby's saying, "Oh, watch the game and look for," to let me know what you see, and a lot of them just they weren't sure. So it was good for me to go back and sort of try and put across what we would be looking for and how we would analyse it all.
We've looked back quite a bit recently in what we've chatted around. Is there anything in terms of your game going forward this season and into next season that you're looking at as kind of your main goals?
I want to get back in the national team setup. It's been a goal since I wasn't there. In order to do that, I just need to be playing as well as I can for Edinburgh. I feel like last season was a huge step forward for me in terms of A, I stayed fit, and B, I started to find a bit of form again. So I really just want to crack on from that and hopefully push myself back in and around that national team setup.
Did you score a hat-trick in your first game last year? Was that the...
Yeah, it's every game at home.
So there's a lot to live up to against Glasgow in the 22nd then.
Well, here's hoping.
Well, it's brilliant to have you on, Mark, in the official Scottish Rugby podcast, to get your thoughts on the season ahead, I suppose the current situation, and obviously the success you've had so far in your career. So we wish you good luck to you and the Edinburgh guys as you start the... Well, you end the previous season and you look to start the new one. It's a
complicated world we're in now, isn't it?
It's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah,
great.
Catch you soon.
Great to have Mark on. Well, you have worked a lot with Mark.
Yeah, worked
as a player and as a coach.
Didn't play with him. I just finished just as he came through. I was aware of him. And Nathan Hines, really good mate of mine, speaks really highly of him as well. He kind of, they were at Claremont together at the same time, and I kind of took him under his wing a wee bit. And just so highly rated over there, and then the season he came back to Glasgow, I started working with him on the kicking front, and he's a good goal kicker as well.
He can strike the ball incredible distance, can he?
Yeah, he's a long range kicker, and again he kind of hinted at it there, he doesn't have a fear of it. It is really quite casual and it's just naturally really good. So he has that up his sleeve as well, a 50 metre plus.
He seems like a real kind of level-headed guy. I can imagine as a player, he's pretty chilled out.
Yeah, and he was, as I was touching on there, he was like that 17, 18 years old as well.
Yeah.
And he's been through an awful lot, big injuries. And he came back, he'd just done his knee, I think, over in Claremont. And he
did his cruciate in Claremont, and
then
did it once he got back as well, I think.
Yeah, he then redid it, that's right. I think it was one of those ones that was redone very quickly. And it's, you know, one of those knees can set you back for a long time, but doing them, you know, back to back, sure it was. But yeah, he's always been that kind of level-headed way. He doesn't take things too seriously, but he's not a type of guy that's messing about with training ever. He's not like
the, he always went to switch it on.
He's not a class clown in any way, but he's just got a great nature about himself.
He's kind of quiet giggler, isn't he? You just always see him with a wee smile on his face, but he's a powerful player as well. Like one of the he kind of put him in the more slight category for a midfield player, but he's so powerful. And I remember he mentioned the Commonwealth Games there, and one thing that he was really proud of, and he should have been, was his defence in the Commonwealth Games. Because he'd always been kind of seen as quite a lateral defender, a really good tackler, but in an era where they wanted players to press up and push up really hard, he made so many dominant tackles in sevens. And that's a difficult thing to do. Yeah. It's fair enough when there's 14 other players getting in the defensive line, but he went into that with the confidence that he was going to attack well, but he actually, his defence, and not only can he passive tackles that you get quite a lot in sevens because you're covering so much space, but dominant tackles as well. And it was brilliant for his development into the, I suppose, his 2015 journey to the World Cup was pretty special for him.
One of the few players who can play at the very top of both forms of the game. I mean, that 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of players like that, but the games have changed so much that they're different skill sets, but he crosses over fantastically well. And to your point, Moshi, he develops one to the other. It makes him a better player at sevens and at 15s.
Other news this week in the world of international rugby, we've finalised date for the conclusion of the 2020 Guinness Six Nations and the Women's Six Nations. So, Rachel, you've got a few games to play, but three games left to play. The first of which is France at home, the weekend of the 24th of October. Wales away a week later, and then a four-week break before concluding away in Italy on the 5th of December. So a lot of rugby in the Six Nations still to be played for the women.
Yeah, and a nice way to start with a very physical France team after a couple months off. But no, I think the girls are just buzzing to get going and play a bit of rugby again. It's nice just to have something to look forward to and work towards. So yeah, a lot of rugby still to be played this year, and I'm glad that we're actually getting to play it.
And I suppose at the moment we don't know how much rugby you'll play prior to those internationals. So it's like we're talking to Mark earlier on, just the intensity that will be needed at training when you do meet up, when you are able to train together to prepare if there aren't a lot of games for, as you say, a physical French test right away.
Yeah, so I think similar to what Mark said, I think there's going to have to be an element of gameplay, game-like scenarios in training and the build-up to get our bodies ready for it. Hopefully there might be a bit of club rugby in the build-up to get us some minutes in, but again, that's not confirmed at the moment. So yeah, it's still all a bit unknown in terms of build-up and stuff, but we've been assured that we'll be given kind of as much support as possible in that build-up. So yeah, we're looking forward to it and kind of can't wait to just play a bit of rugby.
And that game will be at Scotstoun?
Yeah, so first game against France is at Scotstoun. And then the last two are away. So good to get back to Scotstoun as well. I've not been there in a while.
Well, England topped the table in the Women's Six Nations, 19 points. France, 11. Ireland and 9. Italy and 4. And you guys, with three games to play, are sitting at 1 point with Wales. And you play the teams around about you, obviously Italy and Wales. So yeah. There's a real, I suppose, opportunity to beat those teams around about you. It will be a tough opener against France, the physicality they bring, but... the games against Wales have been pretty close of late, and the games against Italy have been quite similar, haven't they? There's not a kind of consistent winner between you guys. So with a bit of momentum, it could be good looking ahead to what could be a big year with qualification for Rugby World Cup next year as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think Wales last year in the Six Nations, we let ourselves down a little bit at the end of the game, and so it's definitely one that we want to go back and put in a good performance against them, and a team that we have put in good performances against. And similarly with Italy, it's kind of gone to and fro. They've probably had the better of us the last couple of times, but a team that we have beaten in the past. So like you say, it'll be a really good build up for us to get three games on the bounce with obviously World Cup qualification still to be confirmed. So yeah, it's hopefully going to be actually what is a really busy end of the year with what, you know, a wee while ago we weren't sure we were going to play this year. So it's really exciting. And can't wait to get back out there.
There is an incredible amount of rugby going to be played, and an incredible amount of, you know, top class international rugby. When you look at the fact that in the space of 6 months, you'll be playing 8 Six Nations games and World Cup qualifiers in there as well. So, yeah, it's as we mostly rightly pointed out, the pre season is going to be massive to prepare yourself for that as well. How much of an eye will there be on the World Cup, if any at all, or will it be just focused on getting these games and a conclusion to the Guinness Six Nations?
To be honest, like, I think our goals haven't really changed. I think we can't really put an eye on that World Cup until we get qualification, and I think so for us the eye is very much on qualification and however that's going to look and focusing on that. So but these kind of first three games will very much just be trying to get back on our stride, get used to playing together again, get our patterns back together, and all of that stuff to put us in the best position to then play well in that World Cup qualification process. And then I guess it'll be next step in terms of Six Nations next year and hopefully working towards the World Cup as well. So, yeah, I think these games for us are very much going to be just getting ourselves backed up where we were speed-wise and get used to playing with each other. So yeah, it's a lot of rugby, but I think you've got to just look at it one step at a time at the moment and kind of get excited about each step as you go.
And everyone's in the same boat, do you know what I mean? There is a lot of rugby, but and in terms of preparation as well, like, I can't really see many teams playing many games before stepping into international. We spoke with Mark earlier, so it is an opportunity to hit the ground running, to see who can get out the blocks fastest. And and as you say, Rach, maybe the training will be designed for that, to get up and run as quick as possible.
Yeah, one thing that you know you're going to get with the squad of girls that we've got is that everyone's going to come back in good nick. Mm. So with that, hopefully we can get kind of through the early stages of back to rugby prep quite quickly, and give us a good opportunity to have a good build up into those games. And like you say, we are on a pretty even playing field in terms of how much rugby people have going to have played. I know France are back in training already. So that'll be quite a tough contest because they'll have a good build up, but hopefully, you know, once we get back in, we can hit the ground running and really do our best to get a good prep before those games and give it our best shot.
The under 26 nations, well, Scotland lads completed their games obviously with that big victory in Wales, but other nations hadn't completed the games, but they won't be replayed. That's there's a line being drawn under the under 26 nations, and there'll be no winner crowned. But obviously the Guinness Six Nations is yet to finish as well, and alongside you guys' dates, we've got Wales Scotland confirmed for the 31st of October at 2:15. We don't know where that'll be yet. There's a field hospital on the pitch at the Principality in Cardiff, so it'll either be, I think, behind closed doors, Al, somewhere in Wales, or even potentially in England, in London somewhere, where there's a bigger capacity to accommodate some fans. So we'll bring you more details of that as we get them, but there's a bit to play for in the men's Six Nations as well.
There is indeed, and it was an interesting one, wasn't it? The end of the tournament, and I mean, it seems like an awful long time ago, but the guys, the players, the fans, everybody wanted back into it straight away as soon as we get close to those games. I've got to say, I was optimistic about Scotland going down to Wales just at the end of that tournament.
You must still be optimistic.
Yeah, it's still optimistic. I think as always, and we've talked about it before, a key to Scotland being successful is having the pro teams playing well. Now, we're entering into a stage of the pro teams, which we were chatting about with Mark, which is unusual, completely unusual, the fact that we were going straight into these 1872 games and then knockout stages of both Guinness Pro 14 and of Europe. But that probably bodes well. Like, the guys will be used to playing big games, and it won't be a long time until they enter into the conclusion of the Guinness Six Nations.
Yeah, Ireland and Italy both have two games to play, and they play each other on the 24th of October, and then there's a Super Saturday type event on the 31st of October. Wales, Scotland at 2:15, Italy, England at 4:45, and then France versus Ireland at 8 p.m. So England top the table at the moment on points difference from France, both on 13. We are sitting third on 10 points, with Ireland on 9 below us, as I say, with two games. So, as always, finishing position, you want to finish as high as possible for a whole host of reasons. But there's an opportunity for Scotland to finish well. I believe, Rachel, that they had a lot of momentum. They were on form going down to Cardiff. And I believe that, you know, the lack of a full capacity at the Principality Stadium will be a good thing for us, because the Welsh players really revel in that atmosphere. So would you agree and say if all goes well, we've got a good opportunity to mark the start of the international calendar with a positive performance?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like Al said, the boys were just coming into form as they were kind of due to head down to play Wales. So hopefully, similar to us, they're going to come back in and have had a good prep in terms of the pro teams coming back in quite early and stuff like that. So hopefully be in good shape, have a good bit of experience playing alongside each other and against each other, I guess. Go down there with a good opportunity to make the most of, as you say, what's going to be quite a strange environment to play in. Going away from home is always difficult, particularly in the men's game with crowds like they get. So it's definitely one where they can try and make the most of that and come away with a good finish to the tournament.
Yeah, and as you say,
differences in the team, do you think, Mossy? I mean,
you can never tell over six months,
and if it's picked, it'll be picked on form. Clearly, it'll be picked on the pro games that we're talking about.
You couldn't possibly start to pick a team now, you know, without seeing any games. The Derby games will be the first marker for everybody to put down, and then the date for next season kicking off have yet to be announced. But I assume it'll be maybe around the start of October once the Guinness Pro 14 finals and the European finals have all taken place, of which Edinburgh are still in the European hunt as well. So it could be more knockout rugby, as we spoke about, for the Scottish players there. Whereas if the Glasgow players don't reach the playoffs, there's maybe a training window for them as well. So you just have to see how things turn out. It's a totally unique situation to try and predict teams, squads, performances, results. But the game is to mark or to conclude the end of last year's Guinness Six Nations. But it's going to be in and around an autumn series as well. So I think it's really important that the players treat it as last year's game and not, I think, get caught up in a 6 week or whatever it was, 5 week block of international rugby. It will be different to the matches that potentially played before and after. So other news coming out the Scottish rugby camp this week is some coaching appointments, and John Dalziel is moving from Glasgow Warriors to assistant coach in the national side, and Peter DeVilliers becomes full-time member of his scrum coach, McGregor Townsend's national team. So really impressive coaches themselves and getting positive roles. And also an old face, Al, coming back to Glasgow, Kelly Brown replacing John Dalziel at Glasgow Warriors.
Yeah, like first and foremost, two fantastic moves for both the coaches, I would say, for JD and for Kelly. What John's done at Glasgow is he's come in and he's grabbed it straight away and done it exceptionally well. And there was always going to be a little bit of movement happening. But I think he's impressed Gregor enough that Gregor said, no, you're the guy that I want in the mix. Quite similar, like, as well as being, and you know John well, but as well as being, you know, pragmatic when it needs to be, and a spade's a spade, a deep thinker about the game as well. And that will suit the way Gregor will want him to coach as well. And as you say, Kelly Brown coming back to Glasgow, part of the Killer Bees. I think that's another great move. He's finished playing the game. He was coaching Saracens Academy. He's been involved in Gregor's coaching camps on a few occasions. You'd have worked alongside him, mostly in some of those specialist coaching roles. And I think from a Glasgow point of view, a great appointment.
And Rachel, you'll know the guys well. Have you experienced being coached by either of them?
No, I haven't actually, but I've been aware of, I think, probably more Kelly Brown down at Saracens and hearing about him coming through. And he seems to be the kind of guy that has a kind of real good personality around the squad as well. And I can imagine as a coach going into Glasgow, he'd probably be really good for building a bit of culture there as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a link to the team, obviously, as Al says. You say, I know John Dalziel well. He was my under 18 captain.
There you go,
John Dalziel. There you go. We played together at Gala for a good number of years before he moved to Melrose. But
he looks all younger than you.
I know. Thanks, Al. Yeah, I'll shock you as well. He was a centre back then. He was my outside centre. I played standoff, and John was a centre back then, and he moved into the back row when he moved up to senior rugby.
Did he play senior rugby in the centre?
His first game for Gala was at centre. Yeah, he might even have played in the wing at one point as well for Gala.
I'm right in saying he played a decent amount of rugby at Melrose as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. He was really successful at Melrose as a player and as a coach. He's coached Scotland under 20s. He's head coach of the national sevens side. He really has worked hard and. Yeah. And he gets his reward with being part of the national setup, and he's a proud Scot. I'm delighted to see he's getting an opportunity.
And as you say, Peter DeVilliers coming in, and he did fantastic things last year with the scrum. And you speak to Gregor about him, and again, a coach that Gregor likes because he looks at the technicalities of the game as well, and you only need to look at the Scotland set piece throughout the whole of the tournament last year was great, so I'm sure he'll make big strides as well.
Yeah, a good addition. Again, difficult for a consultancy role last year to come in, but you don't have a lot of time as an international coach anyway. You probably have even less as a consultant in an international environment, and to make the impact he did as quick and as efficiently just shows you how good Peter is and the impact he's made.
Rach, I hear on the grapevine that you've been cheating on us a little bit from a podcast point of view. You've been promoting Certain Island.
That's where I am next week. Recorded a podcast with Kim McAllister talking about Arran, the best island in the world.
And why to you is it the best island in the world?
Oh, I've been going there since I was wee, so just somewhere that's got a lot of memories for me. So that is actually where I'm off to next week on holiday.
Nice. And I'm right in saying on the podcast you did, there's a little bit of a look at a mental health and the ability to escape when you needed to escape, and that's part of what you were chatting about?
Yeah, a little bit. It's quite a while ago now that we recorded it, but yeah, we chatted a bit about kind of how good it is as a place to just go switch off, get some good exercise in, etc. It's definitely what I use it for. So yeah, we chatted a bit about that.
She's outgrown us, Mossy. She's picking up all sorts of different gigs.
That's not difficult. I was going to ask you. You've been on your merry tour of the West Coast Highlands and Islands. Did you take Arden in the last week or so?
No, didn't take Arden in. We were actually originally 6 months, 7 months ago planning to go island hopping, but just with everything the way it is at the moment. We stayed mainland and we camped and took the tent for 9 days, and then
you survived nine days in a tent.
Kids loved it. Kids can sleep anywhere. To be honest, it was great, because every day is a different adventure, and I think that's a bit like Aaron for you, Rachel, that it's just your ability to switch off.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. I'm away next week on my holidays, so I'll leave it to these guys to take over. Thank you very much.